I guess while we're waiting, I can talk about a few resources that might be helpful to you. This book just came out. It's Dr. Mona Delahook. She has another book that she wrote 3 or 4 years ago that's really, really good. But if you're into a little bit of the science, this is really well written. It's written for professionals, but I feel like it's also written for the layperson. It's really easy to read. And she has examples. She has kind of worksheet type, you know, checklists and things like that. But it's called Beyond Behaviors, Using Brain Science and Compassion to Understand and Solve Children's Behavioral Challenges. Excellent, excellent. I'm not quite halfway through, but I am highlighting like crazy. It's really, really good. Another resource that I thought of after you asked me about attachment, Kirk Thompson. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he wrote Anatomy of the Soul. It's really good, and it's Dan Siegel is great. He's a psychiatrist, and I mentioned him earlier with the whole brain child. But Kirk Thompson, I think I don't know if he trained under him or they just worked together. But Kirk Thompson is the faith-based version of that, and so he has two books. It's Anatomy of the Soul, and then the second one he wrote, and both of these have been written many years ago. But the second one is called Soul of Shame. So for parents that are really struggling with their own attachment issues and feeling, you know, like they're failures and that kind of thing, really good. If you ever get a chance to hear Dr. Kirk Thompson, he is phenomenal. He's wonderful. I'm trying to think of some other resources. Talks about Dan Siegel. And I was telling her, the Karen Purvis Institute of Child Development has a YouTube channel, and all of these animates are there, but they also have short clips. A lot of them are just introductions to some of their DVDs, and so it's something that you can kind of take a look at. Some of them you can use to help parents, but it also would be good for you to kind of look and see maybe if you're interested in ordering some of their DVDs. They have amazing, it's called the Healing Series, which is several different DVDs that you can purchase. You can go to their website, the Institute's website, which is www.child.tcu.edu. And they also have articles if you're interested in reading any of their research articles. Those are there, and other articles from other, people that have done research on attachment and this sort of work through relationships. There's a lot of really, really good stuff out there now, especially now that kind of the term trauma-informed care is really popular now. There are lots of people doing good work around this subject matter. So there's not any lack of work that you could be looking up, and if people are questioning you, doop. I mean, we were just talking about schools, and there's a wealth of articles just regarding positive relationships between teachers and students and how that benefits. I mean, you can just find, you know, tens and twenties of articles that promotes that. So it's all good stuff. So I said that I would show you this coming back. This is the second animate that the Institute created specifically about attachment. So this is going to kind of review what we talked about in last session, and then we'll go into the correcting
young
principles.
Young children use their attachment figure as a secure base for exploring and coming to understand the world. When they feel safe, they will venture out and explore the physical world, explore the social world. That sense of felt safety is a crucial aspect to feel good about moving out into the world. So building attachment is a matter of building connection, and that programming makes us resilient, sensitive to other people's needs, sensitive to our own needs, and a healthy, well-functioning human being. In secure individuals, we see that rich set of connections. When we talk about attachment, we're talking about the dance between a parent and a child. How well we're able to dance together will determine how well they're able to dance with other people later in life. We also know that my ability to dance with my child is determined by my past to a large extent. But we know that infants who become securely attached have parents sensitive to their needs. But here's the key thing. If they're separated, secure babies look distressed, but the avoidant babies did not look distressed. So they learned to mask this internal state of fear and anxiety, and that's the origins of the avoidant adult's experience. A person may do fine in situations that don't demand interpersonal connection, but when they demand that interpersonal connection, they begin to flounder. An ambivalent baby looks like a secure baby. They can be hard to distinguish. Both babies are distressed when the attachment figure leaves. The difference is what happens once they actually reunite. An anxious ambivalent baby, they want to be reunited, but once they're picked up, they may push away a little bit, or they may be stiff, or they may kick their feet. We know from research that parents of anxious ambivalent infants have only been available inconsistently. Now, there's a fourth classification, and that's called disorganized. A disorganized baby has no clear pattern to the way they respond. The person who should be providing them security is a source of pain and hurt, and that shows up in their behavior. When attachment is derailed, we have kids who look angry, can't regulate their emotions. In TBRI, we talk about principles. Well, the connecting principles are designed to promote the kind of relationship that leads to secure attachment. And the engagement principles especially make a difference for children who come from hard places. So it's structure and nurture. But the good news is there's the hope that comes from knowing that this can be done. And the path is awareness. The path is mindfulness.
Yeah, and I love how he says there is hope. One of the terms that I've heard used, I'm not really sure if it's a TCU term or just somebody else, but we often say any age, any stage. It's not too late. It's not too late to work on your attachment. It's not too late to work on trusting relationships and building secure attachment. So, oops. All right. No, I don't want that. So that's what I love about TBRI is it gives us hope to keep on working. Something else that I just thought of as far as a resource, a new video is coming out, and there is a trailer on the YouTube channel, or if you follow the Karen Purvis Institute on Facebook, they put the trailer on. But it is a trailer documentary that will be released, I want to say next week. Maybe the following, it might be the last week of April. But it's a documentary based on a judge, a drug court, family court judge in Tyler, Texas, Judge Carol Clark. I got the privilege of working with her several times because Bull's home is just an hour and a half from Tyler. So she placed many kids with us. But she uses TBRI in her court, and not just with the kids, but with the offending families. And they have seen some amazing results. Some, I don't know what the stats are, but this documentary does show some of the families that were able to regain custody of their children after going through, of course, treatment and lots of training. But it's called, the documentary is called All Rise, and it should be released at the end of this month. And I think they're just going to put it out for free on an open source link. But you might just be watching for that. But I'm thinking, if the court system can do this, and also lots of the probation in Williamson County, which is around the Austin area, Travis County is Austin, but Williamson County is around that area, they are starting to use TBRI in the juvenile justice system. So if they can do it, we can do it. I'm thinking if they can figure out how to use it there and make a difference, we can do it. So, okay, so this last session is the correcting piece. So this is like the hands-on piece. And I will say, I hate that I don't have more than an hour with you on this, because this is really going to just be kind of a skeleton and an idea of what this looks like, because you really need some time on looking at role plays and watching videos to understand, because this is a very intricate piece. And a lot of times what happens is, and I can speak for myself, because when I went through training way back in, I think it was 2009 that I went through practitioner training, you walk away going, okay, this is amazing information, but then you go home and you're like, how do I really implement this? And so where I found a lot of my work is with families or organizations that's exactly what happens. A set of parents go to a training maybe like this or somewhere in their community, and they're like, oh, this is amazing, but I really don't know how to do this. I don't have to implement it. Or an organization does the same thing. So being able to help, you know, step by step work people through that is something that I've done over the years and has been really good. So, as you can see, each principle of TBRI have two pieces to the principle. So just like the other two, correcting has two. There's the proactive strategies and the responsive strategies. And I've kind of said the word proactive throughout the day, because the way we're proactive, is by not waiting for the moment for the child to have a meltdown. I think that's kind of what we're doing now, as it's like, we're having all these issues. So now what do we do? This kid's hitting this other kid, so no matter what I do. And there are things that we can do with that. However, if we step back knowing that we have issues, then we can say, how do we set it up to where we can teach and practice? And this is where I talk about discipline. When you think about the word discipline, what kind of comes to mind? How are you, you know, what is discipline? Okay, very good. So you're already there. Good job. So to be a disciple, right, is to be a follower or somebody that is learning behind somebody, right? And so I think for whatever reason, I don't know if it's just our society or whatever, we have kind of turned that into discipline is punishment. And that's not working very well for us, especially with many children having the tough histories that they come to us with. And so maybe reframing and stepping back and going, okay, discipline is about teaching, taking the opportunity to teach and give skills. And when they do mess up, we're here. And yes, there are consequences. Okay. I'm not saying that people should not have consequences, but you're alongside them with them and saying, you know what? I'm sorry that you made this decision. And I'm so sorry that because of that, this happened. So let's work together. How do we get out of this? You know, I remember one time I had a teenage boy, that was able to, you know, we had kind of level systems way back then. And so he got up on the level system where he could go out and hang out with his friends, unsupervised, that sort of thing. So in our town, there was a Hastings bookstore with the video games and the videos and books and things. And so he and his buddies were there, and he thought it'd be funny to go get a pornographic magazine and play around with it. Now, you know, most of them would have those, something covering the pictures. Well, he took it off, you know, so they could see what was on the cover of the pornographic magazine. Well, he got arrested for vandalism. And so he was just trying to goof around, but he wasn't thinking. He wasn't using this the executive functioning, the prefrontal cortex. So it would have been real easy for me to go, what were you, that's goofy. What are you thinking? But you know, we got him out. Well, I don't think he went to jail. I think they had the police come and we went and picked him up and that sort of thing. But it would have been easy to say, you're off this level. You'll never get back on it. It was stupid. Da da da. When we were able to work with him and say, well, this really probably wasn't a very good idea, was it? No, it wasn't. So I think you need a little bit of structure around you now. And we didn't say that at the time because this was before TBRI. But if I were a TBRI person, I would say, your behavior is telling me that you need more structure. And so let's not have any outings for a little while, and let's work on this, and let's work on thinking through things. And when you're ready, we can try this again. Okay. So that's different than, man, I can't believe, you know, you're not supposed to be looking at nude pictures, blah, 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 blah. Right. So that's just teaching him, okay, well, I'll figure out how to do it without them finding out. Right. Yeah. And so if we talk about connection that we talked about in the second session, think about the people that you personally look up to. Maybe people that are mentors to you, whether it's a parent or a teacher or a mentor of some sort, my guess would be that you wouldn't want to disappoint them. You would want to do things where they would say, wow, that's amazing. I'm so proud of you. Why? Because you value their relationship. They have done something with you to build that safe and nurturing relationship. So that's what we're looking for. We're not looking for how many times we can point our fingers in their face and tell them what they've done wrong, or tell them that's sinful behavior, or, you know, why did you do this? This was stupid. We're looking for, you know what? That really wasn't a good decision. I know. And I'm so sorry that the cops came. Yeah, but it is what it is. And, you know, that's kind of the law. You're not supposed to mess up any property. So, but let's figure out how for this not to happen again. Okay? All right. So there are life value terms and scripts that we can use. Choices and compromises, and we're kind of going to go through this in just a second. And then the responsive strategies are about when you're in the moment and when it's happening. When you've got a kid cussing you out. When you've got two boys throwing fisticuffs with each other. How you actually handle that situation. I love this. I know it's hard to read. Either we spend the time meeting children's emotional needs by filling their love cup, or we will spend the time dealing with behaviors caused by their unmet needs. You're going to spend the time no matter what. Okay? And so a lot of times when I'm teaching at schools, training at schools, they will say, how do I have time? I've got to do this, I've got to do this, and I've got 20 kids in my room, and how in the world? Well, if you don't work on the relationship and fill their needs, you're going to have a kid melting down in your classroom, and you're going to have to send them to the, you're going to stop teaching no matter what. Send them to the principal's office. So if we're able to be proactive and work through and teach, work on a positive relationship, then you actually might gain some steps. And what I've heard from teachers that have tried these TBRI skills, there are several schools that I work with that now do nurture groups every day. Now, that's usually for the little guys. But because of that, they would reflect a year after, and I would go and do an in-service for them, and they will say, I didn't think I'd like it because I didn't think I had time for it. But once I started doing these nurture groups with the kids, they would ask, when are we going to do it? Because they loved it. They were getting their needs met. And so they would see the results of what was coming out of them doing this social emotional learning, this time of teaching them how to be compassionate to each other and feeling like that somebody's actually listening to them. So they were able to get on board and realize how important it is. So we're going to spend the time no matter what. All right. So proactive, we really kind of already talked about this. Practice positive social skills when the students are calm and alert. Now, I don't know that I really talked about this. So when I talked to you about the brain, I don't think I did the flip lid piece. So you've got your brainstem, you've got your amygdala, you've got your prefrontal cortex. So when we are triggered, we flip our lids, okay? And that's all of us. We do that, all of us. So when something happens and we're upset or worried or anxious, then we lose this capacity. And depending on how mature we are and how developed we are, it might kind of do this. And then we figure out how to calm ourselves down. We might do our magic mustache or cool our soup and we're okay and get that capacity back. Or we may just full out. I mean, there has been times, I will say recently, I've been pretty busy lately. And if I feel that my plate is too full, there have literally been times when I could not organize my thinking. And I mean, I'm just sitting at my desk. It's not like I'm out doing stuff, but I'm looking at my list of things to do. I'm looking at my calendar and going, when am I going to do all this stuff and the deadlines? And I literally cannot think straight. And so I have to get up and breathe. Sometimes I have to find somebody to talk to, but my lid is flipped. And if somebody comes up to me and says something and sets me off, I don't have access to this processing, figuring out consequences. I may say something not nice. So teaching our kids that this happens and how to gain that back is really important. So it's important for you when you're proactive, don't start trying to be proactive when they're in the moment and they're in full meltdown. Because guess what? They don't have access to this. They're flipped. Okay? But think of times when you can do some teaching of social skills and practice, role play, whatever helps, when they are actually, you know, calm. And we've already talked about the responsive strategies just in general, so we'll get to that in a second. Okay, this is really good. This comes from an article by Henry Sloan Blackpond, and I think those are three different people. I think it's actually, you know, it would be Henry et al., and I believe it's Sloan Blackpond, and I can't remember the year. But this is about having a lens on how you see behaviors, okay? So the lens that we tend to come from is a perspective of viewing all behaviors as just willful. It's just willful disobedience. They're just doing what they want to do. Okay? And so what happens is the adult increasingly gets frustrated, okay, and probably mad, and then gets more rigid on the rules. Okay? Oh, you're not going to do what I say? Okay, then you get to do that. Oh, you're still not going to do that? Well, then you get 30 days of whatever, right? It gets worse and worse and worse and worse. Well, what happens with the kid? They increase their resistance. They're like, okay, fine. You ground me for 30 days? Let me show you what I can do, right? And then you have oppositional behaviors. Then you have social problems. They're not getting along with everybody. They get in trouble. They go to jail. I mean, all those things can just spiral downward, okay? But if you were to change your perspective a little bit and look at these behaviors, you remember when I said behavior is communication. If you look at those behaviors from a survival perspective, this is the only way this kid has learned to survive. This is the only thing that works for him at this point. And so we were just talking about discipline and teaching and taking the time to practice and being proactive. So by you guys doing that, you can teach the top child that there's a better way. So, but most people, if they have the perspective of this is just willful behavior, you may not want to teach them. You may be just like done. Like, yeah, you can go over there. I'm tired. Cause we wear ourselves out about it. We take it personal. We think, or we might even think, I'm a failure. I don't know what to do. But if you think of it in, okay, this kiddo, he's just trying to survive. Let's figure out a way, a better way for him to be more successful. Your frustration is a little bit reduced. I'm not saying it goes away because it's still frustrating. But just, you can understand a little bit better. You become more compassionate because you can see from that child's viewpoint of why they would get to the point that they're at. You see the need beneath that behavior. That's a really good little quotation, is look for the need beneath the behavior. Make it make sense. Why would they do this silliness, this craziness? Why would they get so upset or do these things that they're doing? And so by doing that, you're giving them voice. When you... going back to the attachment cycle, that cycle of crisis, meet the need, and then their body comes back to regulation. When you do that with them, when you meet their needs, you're telling them, you are important. Your needs are important to me. Meaning, you can come to me with your needs. You have a voice with me. Whereas we had talked about earlier, some of the kids had, you know, stopped voicing their needs because nobody answered. They kept getting the proverbial no, right? There was nobody coming to meet their needs. So why should they ask somebody to help when nobody's going to come? In their mind, that's their belief system. So viewing their behavior as survival becomes you giving them their voice and them realizing, I'm important enough. I can give words. And then you might see behaviors decrease. You probably will see behaviors decrease. So they become more aware. They become more mindful of themselves. They themselves recognize that this is survival behavior. And this is their fear of maybe losing control, fear of abandonment, all the things that our kids suffer through. And they start beginning to use their words. Now this You can't see it, and I don't know why you can't see it, but this right here, it says manipulation, triangulation, aggression, control, and violence. There's actually supposed to be a red X right here. So it's basically saying these things can go on vacation because they don't have to use those things. They have words now. They're able to communicate with you and tell you what's going on rather than using all of these tactics. So this might be something that you could take back with you. And I actually have a TBRI problem-solving worksheet. I don't know, Ben, do we have, like, email, like, something? I could send this to you guys, and you could send it out if people are interested. But there's an actual worksheet, and I've done this for organizations, and it helps them, like, when you're doing case studies. You know, if you're really struggling with a case, you can sit down together and go, all right, let's get down to this. Let's talk about this. So, you know, obviously, what is the behavior that we're dealing with here? What exactly are we talking about? And then what is the message? I talked about the need beneath behavior. So we've got this behavior. What does it mean? Is it they're just needing to connect? Are they trying to tell us, you know, this whole senioritis thing? You know, where kids get all the way, they're great kids, they're working really hard, one of your best kids on campus, and then right about spring senior year, all of a sudden everything goes haywire. And it's usually because they're scared to death of leaving, right? So it'd be easier to just cause issues and reject you rather than to go through the pain of, number one, not knowing what they're going to do next. Will they still be there for me? I'm grieving the fact that I may go away from the people that I have learned to trust and love, all of those things. So understanding what the need beneath the behaviors are, then you can ask yourself specific questions, or your team, or, you know, if it's your house parents are really struggling with this kid, or maybe the caseworker, or maybe as a interdisciplinary team, you're trying to figure out what to do next. So you can ask yourself, okay, are we connecting with this kid? Like, have we just kind of let that go? Have we kind of done some special stuff with them? Have we played? Have we behavioral matched? All those things. Is that something that we need to work on? Or what about empowering? Is there something that we need to do? Like, is this kiddo having some sensory problems? Or are they, you know, we need to talk to school about, you know, things going on there. You know, how can we empower? How can we change the environment? Meet the needs there. Have we taken the time to teach? I mean, are we expecting too much of this kid? If he doesn't know how to use his words appropriately and we're not teaching him, then why are we blaming him, right? Have we taken the time to do some teaching on that? Catching it low. I think I talked a little bit about this earlier. So when we were watching the video with Dr. Purvis, and she was, you know, catching it low, where she could see, you know, the kid just kind of walked off, and then she was lowered the bar of expectation when the kid wanted to do the light switch. Are we really paying attention? Because I think what happens is all of us, even biological parents, our worlds are so busy. We're moving from one thing to the next thing, and our kids are involved in all this stuff. We're not catching it. We're not catching the subtle hints of them starting to dysregulate. Because if you can catch that on the beginning end, you might be able to curtail a huge blow up. You might go, I notice you're pacing a little bit. You something bothering you? Do we need to take a walk or get a drink or something? That in itself could keep you to have hours and hours of yelling and screaming. Okay? So catching it low is really important. Do you have a plan? Do you have a calming plan? So you guys may need to sit down and talk with the child or talk with each other about what does that kid benefit from? What do they like? Do they like the weighted blankets? Is it calming to them to sit down and color? You know, what is it? Because every child's different, right? So coming up with a plan, and you can have that in their chart, or make sure that the house parents have that, so that when that time comes, that's kind of a language that, you know what, I know what you need. Let's go get some colors. I know you really like to color. Let's color for a second and help you to calm down for a second. So having a plan is important. And if you have answered no to any of those questions, you got some work to do. Got some things to figure out. It'll help you kind of have a direction. And then follow up. Don't forget about it. I know it's real hard because we get busy, but let's circle back around. I don't know if you guys have team meetings or how that works, but you know, within a week or two, circle back and say, hey, we came up with this plan for this kiddo. How's that working? What's going on? Because sometimes we pick the wrong thing. I mean, sometimes we just have to guess. You know, let's see if this works. It don't work so good. Let's try something else. Okay? So what you're looking for in changing behaviors through relationships, number one, that you're connected. That is the most important piece. Relationship is the most important part. Okay? Then that both people, the child and the adult that is, you know, working on changing the behavior, that you're both content with what you've done. Okay? So you might have to compromise. Remember we were talking about negotiating needs earlier. And the kid, you know, we're talking about going in for dinner, and the kid said, hey, I'm almost done with this game. Can I have 5 or 10 more minutes? Well, if the adult, if it's not a, let's say they needed to go to an appointment, you didn't have 5 or 10 minutes to do that. I mean, the adult is still in charge, and you only negotiate what you have to give and what you're okay to give. So it needs to be something that everybody's content with. That adult's not content given 5 to 10 minutes, then maybe there's another negotiation or choice that they can offer. So stay connected, both people be content, and then that the behavior's changed because you're looking to change the behavior. Okay? So those are the goals. All right. So these are the specific pieces to the TBRI correcting strategies. The first is the ideal response. Okay? And each letter of ideal stands for something. So the I in ideal stands for immediate. Dr. Purvis says that if you respond to a behavior within 3 seconds, then they are sure to learn something. Okay? Respond appropriately, of course. If you let it wait, now if they're completely melted down and you don't, if their lid's flipped, then you probably don't have access anyway. But if you're able to respond and say, hey buddy, that's not okay. You can't kick so and so, or, it's not okay to skip class, or, you know, whatever it is, respond as quickly as you can, especially if our kids are having trouble processing and remembering. You need to, respond to it as quick as possible because they'll forget. I mean, you'll ask them a few hours later and they'll go, I didn't do that. And it really may be that they forgot. Many of our kids have had drug and alcohol exposure in the womb in utero. And so, fetal alcohol, it is really tough on our children. And what's crazy is, our doctors are not trained on how to diagnose it the right way. They are only trained, most of them, and I'm hoping it's getting better, but they're only trained on the facial features. Well, those only happen in a small window of pregnancy, and it's typically in the beginning stages, the first few weeks of pregnancy. And many times, moms may not know that they're pregnant, so they're drinking. I mean, if they drink alcohol and they don't know they're pregnant, why would they stop? Okay? And so we can still have fetal alcohol syndrome without the facial features. And so you have often children that don't understand writing, reading, they don't process well, they don't remember, they don't have very good cause and effect. I have a dear, dear friend, Debbie Jones, who was one of the very first in-home interventions that Dr. Purvis did way back in the, I want to say, 90s. And a lot of this stuff was created around their table. Their son Dane was adopted from Romania, and they adopted him. I think he was like a year old. He might have been 12, 13 months old. So a lot of people think, oh, I can adopt when they're an infant out of the hospital, or I can adopt, you know, when they're babies, and it's not going to be a problem. They still have trauma. They may have had trauma in utero by substances, but the trauma that they are away from their caregiver in itself is a trauma. So by the time he was about 10 years old, he was so aggressive that he was trying to throw himself out of the car. It was that bad. and they had gone through psychiatrist after psychiatrist, medications that made it worse because they were giving him speed, and it just made it just exacerbated his symptoms. So finally, they met with Dr. Purvis, and she said, "Let's try one more thing." And they did a very intensive in-home program where they kept him no farther than 3 feet away from him at all times. So they basically took him back down to infancy, because typically, unless your baby's sleeping in the crib, they're right there with you, right? You can't just set them down, okay? And so they went backwards and did all the development that he needed. He's 30 years old today. No, I'm sorry, he's 28. And he still has the effects of FASD. He can live in his own apartment, but he can't do his own checking account. He can't drive. He still has emotional meltdowns. However, they are not as severe as they were when he was little, and he has the lingo down, so his parents can go with him through the ideal response and all of the TBRI strategies with him, and within just a few minutes he's calmed down. So a lot of people his age that would have been in the same situation are either in jail or maybe not even with us anymore. So I really do believe that he's a miracle. If you want to look at their story, they have on the YouTube channel, they have several different little, what are they called? Well, anyway, they're very small. They have different case studies, and it's the Jones family is their story. But there's other families, too, that have success stories. So by doing that and just knowing that these families, and maybe you guys, if you have kids that stay with you and age out, and you may have programs that are, you know, college and career and that sort of thing, these kiddos that have the effects of drugs and alcohol, they will, unfortunately, because that's brain damage. And so, unfortunately, they will have struggle all of their life, but I promise you, TBRI will help, and it will keep them, hopefully, out of jail or alive. All right, so immediate, 3 seconds. The next piece of ideal response is direct. Stay engaged. Stay connected, okay? Don't stand over them. Sit down with them and have eye-to-eye contact. Let them know that you are there for them emotionally. Okay, make sure that your voice is soft. Okay, let them know that you're there to meet their needs. Being direct. Efficient. Now, there's a whole section about efficient, which is the levels of response. But basically, being efficient is use only the amount of structure that's necessary. Dr. Purvis would say, don't use an elephant gun to kill a mosquito. Okay, just use the amount of structure that is necessary to help the behavior. Okay? Keep that behavior moving forward. And this is what's so hard, because we get so invested and so frustrated sometimes, is it's hard for us to go back to play. But it's very important that once it's over, it's over. And you need to let that child know that I still love you. I still care for you. We are still in relationship. It's not okay for you to treat me that way. It's not okay for you to do those things. And we're going to work through this together, but we're still family. I still care about you, okay? And then action-based. So the whole, when we watched the video and Dr. Purvis had her go do it over again, where she came back to her like she was supposed to, that's using action, helping them to practice. Role plays are good. Nurture groups are good. Social emotional learning activities are good. So letting them use their bodies, and through kinesthetic learning, their brains will remember and their bodies will remember. And giving them an opportunity to redo it. And you know what? Sometimes we as adults need a redo. So there might be times when you go, you know what? I have really had a long day. Can I have a redo on that? And they will love it, because they like you being vulnerable with them, saying, I'm not perfect, and I want to redo this with you because you're important to me. I don't want to lose relationship with you, so I, as the adult, am going to redo it. And you want to level your responses at their behavior and not who they are. Because I hope to heavens that the Lord does not define me by my behavior, because I mess up all the time. So we want them to know that this is not who you are. You know, there are some things you must have, some needs that we need to respond to, and let's work together on that. So make sure that you level your responses to the child's behavior. Setting the bar. You know, this is real important, because a lot of times, we talked about, I think in the beginning of the day, how most of our kids are half the age developmentally that they really are biologically. And so what they look like is often really deceiving. There was a young man that we had at Bowles Home that was probably about 6'4", big old guy. And if you really watched him, he had poor motor skills. He had a hard time using forks and knives. He didn't really have good eye-hand coordination. He kind of walked real clumsily. And another thing that he did was, he loved pulling heavy things around campus. One day, I will never forget, we kind of have a circle. I don't know if anybody has been to Bowles Home before, but we have this big circle that all the cottages are around. And he was in the middle of the circle pulling a tractor tire, just pulling it, just as happy as he could be. And there were times when he would come over to our house, and we had an old, like one of those gators, and it was broke down, like it didn't even work. He would say, "Can I push that?" "Sure, buddy, go ahead." But we figured out he needed that. That was his developmental delays. He needed work on that. And he really was, even though he was 18 when he left, he probably was about 9 or 10 emotionally. Thank goodness for the military, because he went to the military and did okay. But just setting the bar. And we get deceived sometimes that because they're big old kids and big old bodies, on the inside, they're really little kids. And they have little kid needs. And so maybe sometime, if you're doing the problem solving sheet that we kind of looked at earlier, maybe you add to that, are we asking too much? Like, are we setting the bar way too high? Do we need to step back just a little bit and let him work down here on this level? Now, that didn't mean you stay down there, because you really do want your kids to grow. So go ahead and lower the bar a little bit, but then when they're ready, let's inch it up a little bit. So an example of that would be if we're doing an activity, let's say maybe nurture group, and a child didn't want to do the Band-Aid activity, then you might say the first time, "It's okay, you can pass this time, but there may be a time when I need you to participate, okay? No big deal. Let them go. Next time, I don't want to do that." Okay, well, how about you do this piece with me, and then if you don't want me to put the Band-Aid on, that's okay. You can keep the Band-Aid. So it's kind of a negotiating, kind of halfway participating. Then that's higher, raising the bar just a little bit. Then the next time, I don't want to do Band-Aids. I don't like Band-Aids. "Okay, buddy. You know, we worked on trust. You know we want to meet your needs, right?" "Yeah. This time, I'd like for you to try. I'd like for you to try it this time." "Well," and and then you can kind of negotiate a little bit on how much trying is. You decide. The more you do it, the more you know the child and have a relationship with the child, you'll know how much they can take. And the other thing, we're talking about Dr. Purvis and her putting her finger, on that girl's. She knew how much that young lady would handle from her. There are things that we can say to kids that we know we have a good working relationship with, that we could probably get away with, that you wouldn't be able to get away with a kid that just walked on your campus and didn't know you from Adam, right? So kind of knowing, it's really called the attachment dance. That attachment dance is about, we have this thing, we have this dynamic between you and me. This is our pattern of relationship. And I know I can say this to you, and you can say this to me, and I know if I say this, it's going to hurt your feelings, so I may not do that. Or I know that if I ask you to give me a big bear hug, that's way out of your comfort zone, so I'm not going to do that. I'm going to honor that. So that attachment dance is really important to know where to set the bar. And that's considering the student's history, the current circumstances they're in, and anything else that you may know about the situation. I love this mantra. Okay, we got 15 more minutes. Okay. So this mantra is Dr. Cross's baby. And he says, stay calm no matter what, which is really hard for us sometimes. See the need behind the behavior. So tell yourself, when you have a challenging behavior, a kiddo that's really maybe even triggering you, look for the need beneath the behavior. Maybe look for the need beneath your behavior. Meet the need, and he says, find a way. Find a way to meet that need. And don't quit, because if we quit, then who's going to do it? Who's going to take care of these kids? So we have been charged by God to take care of these kiddos. Okay, so we've got 15 minutes now. I've got more slides. I put this slide here because I was worried that I wouldn't have enough time to go any farther. I've got more slides that go a little bit deeper into the correcting pieces. However, if you guys have questions and would like to ask questions, I want to open up now because I'm always afraid that I don't leave enough time at the end. I also have some videos that I could show you. So there's a couple options. What do you think would be more beneficial? Everybody's tired. Videos? Okay. Awesome. Any questions? Like, are there some things that you're like, this isn't going to work. I'm confused. I can do that. Yeah. I could do that. Good. Yeah. I'll try to remember to do that. Make sure I remember to do that then. Okay. Let's see here.
Just for a minute. If you have
yes.
Time.
Yes.
Some people I know are already kind of certified in this that are here, but a lot of us are not. And
yeah.
Not sure what the next step is.
Okay. Absolutely. So there is no certification. You become a practitioner, which I guess kind of sort of certifies you. There's no like license or certification number that comes with the training, but they have a week-long face-to-face training. Now they're doing it several times a year, and I'll give you some tips because they told us several cities that they're going to be doing.
One in Oklahoma City, there's one in California somewhere.
Yeah, they're in several this year. But what happens is you apply, and you will do that through TCU. And I gave out that website. Everybody got the website? Okay, child.tcu.edu. And you will do 10 weeks of prep work before you do the week-long training. And then you also do what's called the AAI, which I did not talk about, and I guess I will take the opportunity to do that. Ben's shaking his head back there. but the AAI is called the Adult Attachment Interview. And what they will do is somebody from the Institute who is actually certified in that will interview you, and they will ask you about your relationships. It's basically to tell you what your attachment style is. And it's the gold standard. There are other tools that can do that, but the AAI, if you want to know for sure, because basically what they do is they record your answers and they literally score every word you say to determine what your attachment style is. I think they think it's really important for you to know coming into training. If you're going to do this, you need to know what you need to work on. Okay. So that's part of it too. Then you will come in for a week. There will only be one training in Fort Worth next year. Usually most of the trainings are in Fort Worth. But next year, I believe it's September is Oklahoma City.
That's September this year.
Yeah, this year.
Well, yeah, that is this year. Yes. Oh, my gosh. So September this year is Oklahoma City. They will do a training. Then October, I believe, is Fort Worth. Then they'll do a March training in Orange County. I don't know exactly what city, but in California. They're going to do a Shreveport, if anybody's close to Shreveport, Louisiana. And then they said, was it Rome, Georgia?
I think so.
I think they're going to do a Georgia training. So they're trying to make it to where people don't have to travel all the time to Texas, because more and more people from all over the world come. I mean, in fact, when I was there, in March, we had a whole dinner, of people that were from all around the world. We probably had 20 or 30 people around the table just talking about how do you implement in different countries and that sort of thing. I believe it's $3,500. Show Hope, I don't know if you're familiar with Show Hope, but it's Stephen Curtis Chapman, the contemporary Christian musician. He has a nonprofit that funds scholarships, and it's not a full scholarship. I think it's maybe like $1,000, $1,500 toward it. Is it 25? Okay, so that's great. But you can apply for that, and I think that will go to any of those trainings. Used to, yeah. It was just once or twice a year, but I think they're doing it like for all of them.
Yeah, you have to apply for the training, mm-hmm. and then be accepted into the class. Then you apply for the scholarship.
Correct.
It's not guaranteed you'll get it. But
right.
It's expensive if you can make it.
Now, when you've been through that class, is it, if I understood it right, is that, and you can teach this or what?
Yeah, okay, so what you get. Right. So basically what they say is you can train your clients. So if you send somebody from your agency, that person can then train everybody in your agency. And they are kind of, they're pretty lenient. Like if you say, okay, so we've got a set of parents or we've got a school district where our kids go to school. I mean, technically they're not in your agency, but they're serving your kids. Then they usually are totally cool because you guys are doing that, right?
Yeah. What they told us is basically communicating. Your autonomy outside your organization, communicate with TCU and make sure they get credit. We're doing parenting classes in our churches.
That's kind of what I'm looking at.
Yep.
My idea for it.
Yes.
Like they do have you get a whole bunch of training stuff. We've got a training video that teaches caregivers in the residential child care organizations. It's specifically formatted to work with them, teens. And you just get tons of information.
You get what they call the caregiver package, and it's a USB drive, and it's packed. I mean, a lot of these slides come from that. And then it's got videos in it. It's got workbooks in it. It's got evaluations in it. I mean, everything that you need to get started. I think it's like enough for like 6 hours of training or more.
Well,
so they give you
36 hours.
Yeah.
The caregiver training is 36.
Okay, 36 hours. Okay, yeah.
And, it was $500 for the flash drive, but we can use it. Most of it's copyrighted.
And I'm going to say something. I hope it didn't make you upset.
What?
Now
it's free.
It's included in the price of the training.
But it was worth the $500. We actually bought two of them. So.
But for people that are considering it, to me, that in itself is worth getting because you go away with all this and you can equip, you know, that person. However, they do say that belongs to the practitioner.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to speak for the Institute. So, but yeah, it's very much worthwhile doing.
So the flash drive is $3,500 and everything else is free.
Yeah, there you go.
One practitioner is a challenge in an organization. We actually send two more people. We have three. Our counselor that works with our boys and our families is a practitioner, which was very important because it's fully connected what we're trying to do. But trying to do one person training, it's hard. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot. It's not just in our organization. We did a caregiver training, then we start doing groups. We have each house come in for 45 minutes after school, and we have a snack, and then we sit down and do a group. We did the plates, plates, different things. And we've created some things. Our Josh has got a wonderful mind for taking just regular games.
Yeah.
Like a brain game that most kids play and making it into something where we can teach.
Minute to win it games are great,
yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and what I would say is when you bring that to your organization, what you will probably find is when you start training, you will see your adults that need it. Mm-hmm. And so you'll have to do a lot of work there to get them to be able to be emotionally present to do what you're trying to train them to do.
I would say that's about
yeah. You might have some turnover. It is very hard. So I think you're right. It's good to have support.
And we're working with an older generation. Our caregivers are in our youngest couples in their 30s. They have turned out to be the most challenging. And the reason they're the most challenging, both of them was raised in a child care organization.
Yeah, so they're still dealing with their history, yeah.
So we're dealing with their history, and they're having to face their history.
Yeah.
In a way that they wouldn't normally have to. Now, our older generation already raised their children. I raised my children. What's wrong with the way I raised them? And that's what you have to get them to understand. It's not what you didn't. You're not telling them they're wrong. You're just trying to teach them how to do it.
Well, they're raising a different generation now.
That's right. And you do what you know, and once you know, you do better, right?
Yeah.
So, because I look back, and I mean, my children, my oldest is 16, so I mean, I look back at that and go, oh, I wish I would have known all of this when she was a baby.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that's the hard part for me, was looking back at my childhood and thinking, oh, my grandchildren and stuff. But you come to grips. What you did, what you knew now.
Yeah.
And that's how you approach it. You're doing what you knew how. We're going to teach you another way that may be better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good. I think this video is structured engagement. This is Dr. Purvis is doing a camp, and they're working on a nurture group, and these two little guys are distracting everybody. So this is her responding to that.
Yes. Okay. Listen to me. If you guys are talking in the group, we need to separate. Yes, ma'am? Yes, ma'am? You say yes, ma'am? All right. Yes, ma'am? Yes, ma'am? Can you read? All right. That's good. That's a nice group. Now, can I have my wait a minute. Okay. Wait just a minute, please. Okay, listen to me. If you start talking and acting fidgety together, like you did yesterday, we have to separate, okay? Yes, ma'am? Yes, ma'am? Okay, does that work for you? Okay, so let's put Buddy, where would you like to ask your buddy to sit? Right here. So then maybe y'all could trade places. We'll give them an option. And if they can sit quietly, so I think we've got one buddy here and then Elena scoot over here to make room for the buddy on this side, okay, please?
Well,
you're going to still be by him.
No, he wanted to be more than
Africa. Oh, he wanted to sit by Matt. Matt, would you come up and stay in the circle, please?
Where are you going?
Come on back in the circle before you. Buddy's going to sit right there. But if y'all start to get wiggly together, I ask you, Buddy, just to sit here. Okay? Fair enough? Fair enough?
Okay, so what did you notice? They were all chewing bubble gum. That's right. What are some of the things that Dr. Purvis did in that clip?
Eye contact.
Uh-huh. On level. Did she touch? Do you see that little feather touch right here? She's trying to keep them engaged because they were.
Something that I notice on a lot of her things that we try to do and it seems to work, we give them almost like they have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we're controlling the choice.
Absolutely.
But we give them a choice. Like in that, if you sit here, then we can do this. If, they have a choice and they feel. I guess the word would be empowered.
Uh-huh.
Whether it's a choice between what do you want to wear to school today?
Right.
Instead of laying out their clothes, but you never know. So do you want to wear this or this?
Mm-hmm. So it's shared power, and a confident, secure adult can give up a little bit of power. You're still in control. You're still giving them the options, but it is giving the child the feeling of, oh, okay, they're not just telling me everything to do. I'm not a robot. They're giving me options here. It makes them feel like they're a part of the decision making, which is really good. Mm-hmm. Yes. And did you notice she kept on asking either yes ma'am or fair enough? Mm-hmm. She wants them to repeat back just so that it's like a confirmation. So you know what we're going to do? This is fair enough. You understand that if you get fidgety, we're going to have to separate you. So she's literally setting it out for them to know if this happens, then this is going to happen. Fair enough? Yep. Okay. So it's just a confirmation. It's their brain focusing and knowing that this is what's going to happen. Anything else? I know we're at time. So anything else thank you for hanging with me for 3 hours. I really appreciate it. I hope this was helpful. I know it's a lot of information, and there's so much more to learn. And so I hope that you guys are encouraged and seek out more trainings. And I know lots of agencies all around the country are offering things like these guys are. So you might be able to jump in on those things. Or if you want to invest in sending somebody to become a practitioner, that's good too. But it's all really good stuff. All right.
We are willing to travel if you want to invest. We will come and teach. That's our goal. We actually opened an office to do that. So that's our goal. So if you want to get in touch with us, just holler and we'll work out a schedule.
Thank you very much, guys.